Okay, just a word about this first reading. To tie it in with what this thing that Francis, the Bishop of Rome, has been insisting on so much. David was described by a Jewish biblical scholar as an oversexed bandit. If you know anything even about the biblical text, there's a great story of David lusting after the wife of this guy Uriah, whom he had killed, so he could get in bed with Bathsheba. And then Nathan comes and tells this little story about a guy who had one sheep and another guy who had 99 sheep. And the guy with 99 sheep stole the guy with the one sheep and told this story to David. David got madder than hell and said, "Let's show me that guy. I'm going to have his head." He said, "You are the man." So the point of going through all that is, this is the guy who ends up writing the 51st Psalm, the Great Miserere, and it is, again, a token, more of it than a token of God's mercy. So nobody is beyond the pale of God's mercy. Okay, so here's the fourth Sunday of Advent, and we've been going through, you know, the first three Sundays. I hope you can see some kind of connection between the three sermons. The first one being the illumination of our lives by Christ, and then the fruit of that illumination being the consciousness that we are really loved by God. And then that enables us to see our failures, because we don't see it under the pressure of accusation and judgment and all that stuff, but it's embraced, it's enfolded in the mercy of God. So today is kind of a culminative. Say, what does it mean to be converted? You know, what does it mean to really be a member of the kingdom, be faithful to God? Two texts. Again, I've been using texts all through Advent. One is from that magnificent man, Nelson Mandela, who said in the course of his life that no one is free until everybody is free. You know, in the faith, I said, it's nice, that's hard Hallmark cardery, you know, I can say, yeah. So you just nod, and then you can. But that thing is takeable in a number of senses. The most obvious one, I suppose, is the political sense. You know, if everybody's free, that means they're not oppressed by some political boss. You know, so presumably if everybody gets out of my way, then I'll be free to operate, you know, because the boss is not sitting on my head. That's one way of reading the text, a perfectly legitimate way of reading the text, I think. And I don't know. Mandela didn't communicate to me his exact intention, but that's certainly a legitimate way of reading it. But then there is the far deeper way that we get out of the New Testament. And it's the great 26th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked, you clothed me. I was in jail, you visited me. I was sick, I was a stranger, you took me in. That extraordinary number of situations. And then the great massive surprise when people were saying, "Wow, wouldn't we do all that stuff?" You know. And then the people who did not do all that stuff, of course, are condemned. So finally, I think, and I'm, as always, I hope, I'm preaching to myself before you, what goes into this business of the coming of Jesus? What final illumination do I have from that? It should run something like this. It doesn't for me, but I know what it's supposed to be. It means that I look at everybody in the world, especially the most beat up, the most nondescript, the most neglected, the least prepossessing. I say, that's my sister. That's my brother. And my life, the meaning of my life, depends on how well I recognize that and how profoundly I act out of that impulse. You know? Again, Francis comes to our rescue, as he has in so many ways, by calling for a church of the poor and for the poor. a church of the poor and for the poor. That's certainly not the church that I know. It's not the church of London, Ontario. Not the church any place I've been. I don't know any bishop who would relatively easily give up his papal apartments or his episcopal apartment. A few have. Even Fabro's moved out of the Episcopal palace in town and lives in St. Michael's Rectory, which is a beginning. But that transformation can't be cosmetic. It must be an opening of oneself to everybody, even above all, even the least prepossessing, even the least desirable. Even the people who seem farthest on the margins of my consciousness. And as I've been saying all along, what Jesus is supposed to work in us is basically a transformation of consciousness. Who am I really? Who am I really? What determines my values, my choices, my desires, my appetites? If he doesn't embrace everybody, and above all, as Matthew puts it, the least among us, we're not doing the job, or we're substituting some facile imitation of piety, you know, which we're very good at. We're excellent at, as a matter of fact, you know. You just pretend, as long as you can wear a pointy hat or a triple crown or wear a dog collar. That's a Roman collar, for those who are not into the clerical circle. We're clergy today, to this day, in our diocese, regularly see themselves as privileged, not just privileged, but as superior human beings. I mean, they who are supposed to be the models for us, they who are supposed to manifest what Jesus was all about, we get these counter messages, you know. Who wants to hobnob with hoi polloi, the people, you know, the commoners, the bums? And even among us, I mean, it ought to be a source of constant self-examination. We talk about sinning. We got the standard issue catechism litany of sins, you know. Did you beat your little sister? You know, did you lie to your mom about stealing food? Blah, 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 and all that largely rubbish understanding of what's supposed to constitute the good life. Well, the good life depends primarily. And this is what I have a very difficult time, because I've grown up in this church, but it depends primarily on my sensitivity to the people I just as soon ignore, and do ignore, in fact, regularly. Something wrong with this picture, but that's what Advent is supposed to be about. Jesus comes as the universal brother. The least of these, my brothers and sisters. The least of these, my brothers and sisters. That's the people he's identified with. You know, the great Jesuit notion of the preferential option for the poor is not some kind of cosmetic, marginal description of some goddamn do-gooder. No, it's supposed to be a transformation of one's consciousness, of who one is and how one operates. And I think it is very, very difficult to bring off. It is for me. I presume it is for some of you, too. Although I've been really impressed by these, my walkers. I'm going to get a halter. Somebody suggests I need a halter. And somebody takes me out for a walk, and I will, you know, so I don't fall down or run off the trail. But the people who've done this, I have been really deeply impressed by their goodness. And not just because they're taking this old goofy guy out into the park with his dogs. No, but as we sit and talk about their lives, I have been enormously enriched by people's unconscious self-revelation of what they do, how they run their lives. And it's very reassuring. And that's what we're all called to do. Not just at Christmas time, you know, all the kettles are popping, we hope. You know, the Salvation Army, the Sally Ann is out beating the bushes. It kills me that we have to have this, 'tis the season of giving, you know. Then the next season comes on, screw it, now we're back to the regular business as usual, which is me first, too bad for you guys. Well, that's what Christmas is supposed to mean. That's what Christmas is supposed to mean. If it means anything else, it's rubbish. It's an excuse. It's escapism. It's a trivialization of this man's life, this man Jesus, who really did see whores and mafiosi as going into the kingdom before the really pious, the Pharisees, did. So again, we end with, you're going to hear this come Emmanuel again at this final piece of music that Tudis will play. It's come, O come, Trojak. The real Trojak. The Trojak God wants. And that's for everybody. That's for everybody.